Hello, I'm Kirby Shibaga.
I'm Nirav Desai.
And along with our program director, Stephen Hsu, I'm Vinay Narayan. And welcome to XRC Pod, the XR Seattle podcast. In this episode, episode 4, we're going to talk about one of the most exciting technologies in XR, and you probably don't even care about it, eye tracking. Joining us in this episode, I'm excited to have Johan Boven, XR product director of Tobii, one of the leading experts in eye tracking technologies. This next generation technology is already available in numerous headsets that include the HoloLens 2, the Vive Pro Eye, and a module by 7EventsN, Pico Neo 2 Eye, also in Qualcomm's reference design for Snapdragon XR2, Vario, and even Magic Leap. So what do these OEMs know that the end user doesn't?
So Vinay, that's quite a long list of hardware manufacturers that are using eye tracking. You mentioned this is a technology that is critical, but that no one knows they need it. You walk through this journey at HTC. What are the pain points that you're trying to address with eye tracking?
Yeah, that's a great point. A lot of end users are not aware about eye tracking, and it always is really about the end user pain points. I've had the privilege of being able to build and launch XR ecosystems since the DK1 of Vive, and having seen so many hardware and technology and input technologies, I don't really get excited about a lot. But what I do get excited about is really solving the core end user experience. And I think this is why I get so excited about eye tracking, because it's all about the user experience. If you've ever tried to throw something in VR, you know, it's such a cumbersome and just very alien experience. Or what about having to use the controllers? There's so many instances where you may not have access to controllers or be able to use controllers. But also there's a gap in terms of the data. We use heat mapping, but that's after the fact versus what's actually happening in the headset. And by combining the improvements in user interface, by also addressing some performance opportunities as well, we start to open up this new avenue of experiences that's intuitive and natural. And of course, when you look at the inflection point, what is it going to take for HMDs to become a more affordable and smaller? A lot of it has going to have to do with reducing processing needs and performance. And eye tracking is a big part of that. And there's so much more. You know, when it comes to eye tracking, this is definitely not new. I had a chance to chat with Johan Boven of Tobii to really talk about what is the legacy of eye tracking and what are the opportunities. Let's take a listen. You can't talk about eye tracking without mentioning the industry leader in eye tracking technologies, Tobii. Joining us today is someone who I've had the pleasure of working with to bring the first commercially available enterprise and consumer eye tracking headset to market with the Vive Pro Eye. And welcome to the show is Johan Boven. Johan, welcome.
Thank you, Vinay.
Absolutely pleasure to have you here. You know, especially given your experience with eye tracking for so many years, and also just bringing eye tracking to VR. So I really wanted to take some time to really get your perspective, especially when it comes to eye tracking, it not being new. Tobii has such a legacy in this space well before XR. How would you describe those new to eye tracking? What is eye tracking?
Yeah, so eye tracking to me, eye tracking is really a transformational and enabling technology in the true sense of the word. This is a technology that has the capability to add new functionality to a device that are so unique that it actually transforms lives of people and it transforms business models for companies. And as you say, eye tracking has been something Tobii has been working with for almost 20 years. And we have a lot of exciting special use cases for that in assistive technology, in research, in commercial applications. And now for the last 5 to 6 years, we have also gone into XR and are now the world leading company for delivering eye tracking solutions to XR headsets.
That's amazing. And you've also had other technologies that while main HMDs are a way that we commonly think of eye tracking, there's also a lot of non-HMD type of technologies for eye tracking as well.
Absolutely. So eye tracking has been around for a very long time, for probably close to 100 years. Any anywhere since people started looking into the window of the soul, as you say sometimes. Physicians started actually with just paintings, showing paintings to picture to patients, and then having a hole in the middle of the picture. And then through that hole in the picture, the physician would be looking at the patient's eyes to observe their eyes totally manually. And then from that point, technology has evolved. It has become automated research equipment. It has gone into big research setups. And then what we really have done over the last 20 years is made eye trackers that are remote for research on monitor applications. We have made head mounted eye trackers for real world eye tracking research, even without displays, heads up displays in them. And now, again, going into VR and AR and XR as well.
That's amazing. Yeah, and I think as you talk about the physician putting a hole in the picture and having the patient look at the picture, so much about eye tracking is making sure the user is unaware of eye tracking, right? So they're in a kind of a natural environment that they're engaging in a way that's natural to them. And I think that's some of the hallmarks of why eye tracking is so compelling, especially to AR and VR design. You and your team have worked considerably with the likes of even Qualcomm to help with putting the reference design. I'm incorporating eye tracking going forward. How would you say eye tracking is impacting AR and VR H&D design?
That's a good question. There are a couple of ways that I see eye tracking coming into XR. At the core of it, as you say, a lot of the large vendors and hardware ecosystem players have embraced the technology already. This is coming into devices, it's coming into reference designs of Qualcomm's, as you point out. Eye tracking is part of the Kronos Group's OpenXR standardization for APIs. So it is a core component in these headsets, and the way it impacts is a little bit special in my mind, because as you say, eye tracking is best when it's actually not seen quite often. So with the hardware components and the algorithms that basically measure where the user is looking, that data is used real time for a number of different ways. So on the hardware side specifically, eye tracking helps making the devices better. One of the biggest things that have been rolled out now that Qualcomm, NVIDIA, HTC, Pico, and other and us together sort of bring the components for is foveated rendering. So the capability of dynamically moving a region on the screen that is displayed in high resolution and matches exactly where the eyes are pointing. Because we actually just see high resolution on a very, very small area. Like it's about a thumbnail when you stick your hand out. That's the only part that you actually see high resolution. The rest, the brain fills in. So as long as you have the real-time knowledge of where the user is looking, you can use GPU capabilities to move that around and save a lot of GPU power in that way. And that obviously goes back to the whole hardware trade-offs that a manufacturer has to do with looking at battery time, heat and thermal issues, processing power, the higher and higher resolution displays that you need to drive with the GPUs and so on. So that's one big part where we see it coming into headsets. As it makes it in way into headsets, there are other ways it's utilized as well. One other place where eye tracking is utilized in headsets then is the capability of using the same image sensors for identifying on monitoring user presence. There are obviously different levels of security that you can look at in systems. In a sense, the ambient light sensors that are already in there is in one sense of security. When you take off a headset, it usually senses that there's not a person there. With eye tracking, you can add to that and making sure that when the headset is put on, it's not only somebody covering the sensor, but it's actually a live person there because you have eye movements. That security can be taken even to a further step and going into identification. The type of images that the image sensors can bring in eye tracking in XR are this similar to what Iris ID is using. So that's an area where I think we will see a lot of things happening going forward as well.
So you're saying potentially with eye tracking, and although not all eye tracking headsets are created equal, there is the ability for some headsets to even identify who the specific user of the headset is by iris detection.
So yeah, a headset that would implement a solid IR sort of identification framework and use Iris could definitely leverage the same core technical components that the eye tracking system has to achieve that. So there are a lot of things where there are cross sections between use cases and technologies, and we've seen that over the years with Tobii that eye tracking is a technology that is so fundamental in the way that it connects to the user that it the use cases just pop up in both expected and unexpected places.
And of course, this doesn't mean that all eye tracking headsets can do everything. There's so many different tiers, and both when it comes to hardware components as well as software integrations to allow all the capabilities. But clearly, there's so much opportunity for not just the end user with a more intuitive and seamless interface, but also for those enterprise companies and game developers implementing this technology. And one of the things that everyone is looking for when it comes to technology, especially in the non-gaming spaces, what business value does, in this case, eye tracking bring to the companies implementing eye tracking?
Yeah, and that's the part where I find it super interesting to look at the history of eye tracking. Tobii has been working with eye tracking as different use cases for, as I said, for close to 2 decades. I've been part of most of that journey, and there are a lot of applications that really need eye tracking that come to us and say, "Oh, finally, eye tracking is coming into VR as well. Now we have a completely new platform to do our research on, or to do our medical diagnostical applications, to do our distributed focus groups for enterprises, all those kind of things where we know that eye tracking has been a key component for a lot of big enterprises when they make their decisions around their products, around their business models, in actually developing their core offerings to different markets. So there are a lot of different areas there that I look forward to seeing what's going to happen in VR.
Likewise, and you can't talk about enterprise use cases without really talking about security. And security is multiple steps when it comes to eye tracking. There's protecting the end user, but it's also really just good design. How do you recommend those that are implementing and designing for eye tracking based applications and hardware that they implement? What are the best practices that they should look into?
So this is a part where we feel very strongly at Tobii about data transparency to the end user, really, really being transparent with the end users about how their data is going to be used, because we're all aware of sort of missteps in various directions over the last decades as devices have more and more sensors. So we actually, from Tobii's side, we include in all our dealings with companies the requirement to distribute a policy and best practices for how to inform users about the data that is being collected about them and how to make sure that that is accepted explicitly and that you, as a user, actually notice it while you're using the app. So specifically going into specifics, if you are a user and use an application that in the bottom is utilizing eye tracking from Tobii, that application will make sure to ask you explicitly about consent. It'll inform you about what it's done and not hidden down in section 9E. Of the license terms, but actually very explicitly saying, okay, we're now going to record for this purpose. Because there is a lot of value in the eye tracking analysis for the users as well. There are a lot of things you learn from it, but it's important that the user is informed and have a conscious choice, we think. And then also in those applications, we see that there is clear visual cues for when the recording is happening. And I think this is something that you see in other areas as well, if you look for it in a lot of the video conferencing systems, for example. You're starting to have very, very good ways of showing when you're sharing your screen, for example, or when you're muted, but you shouldn't be, or vice versa. So I think this is a trend, and it's something that we definitely want to make sure that eye tracking is considered as seriously by developers.
Yeah, exactly. It's a great point in terms of existing interfaces like web conferencing already identifying when they're tracking your behavior, movements, and data, because that's also not new with eye tracking. And I've seen a lot of the Tobii implementations that allow the end user to be aware and acknowledge, also reject eye tracking. And it's very clear, especially considering you don't need to use controllers to say yes or no. And that makes it a lot easier to implement there as well. But also for developers, Tobii actually has a developer onboarding program, a partner onboarding program, where you actually teach them how to implement a lot of these best practices. Do you want to spend a few minutes just talking about that as well?
Absolutely. So, since Toby has been working for so long with eye tracking, we've of course looked at a lot of different use cases and a lot of different ways of using it. We try to collect all of that on our dev zone and in an application SDK that enables developers to create powerful end user experiences. And when it comes to the value of eye tracking on the application side, I think you can say it divides up into making better experiences and to create actionable insights for the applications. And with better experiences, I mean things like ensuring that you use the graphical resources the best so you can maximize the graphics by using foveated rendering, for example, and get all the shaders and lighting you can possibly fit onto the GPU. You also have things like UI interaction, being able to naturally point, look and select things, having UI objects respond to the attention of the user. And we have both design guidelines there and also some really, really cool middleware that takes care of the detection of where you're paying it, what you're paying attention to as a user. And that beats na the naive approach of just ray tracing the gaze point by a lot. There is a big area as well in creating more natural social experiences. If you look at avatars now, there are a lot of remote collaboration apps in VR coming up as well. If you had the chance to try one with somebody who has an eye tracking headset, where their avatar's eye movements are actually animated as they are looking around, it's night and day from the static eyes or even emulated eye movements that somehow. So those are things that create better experiences, better graphics, better more natural control paradigms, a better social experience.
That's a great overview. I think you've encapsulated so much of what eye tracking is and can be, and the work being done, especially for future HMDs. I always say eye tracking for VR is it's almost like looking at black and white TV to color. Once you've seen color, it's hard to watch a black and white TV set, and eye tracking based experience is very similar. Once you really feel how natural and intuitive VR really can be, and AR as well, it's hard to go back to your gesture or hand-based or controller-based input methodologies.
Yeah, and I think that summarizes really the experience with eye tracking. It's one of those things that when it works really well, users forget it straight away. It's really cool to see users playing around with eye control user interfaces, and then after 5 minutes, turning them off and being super frustrated and never going back to just a mere laser pointer and things like that.
Right.
So it's a big thing there.
Yeah, eyes are a strong social tool. Even in the real world, now that many of us are walking around with face masks, we say thank you with our eyes. We show intent with our eyes. So, we're seeing that in our regular behaviors as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
And then when it comes to the The analytical aspect of eye tracking, just briefly, that is a huge part that I see coming in enterprise and in game development. But a lot of business use cases really involve just as much understanding human behavior in various contexts. It can be in UX research for games where you really want to understand how the players perceive the game and not only interview them afterwards, so getting an objective look at the experience through the user's eyes. You have the same in training, where there are huge differences between professionals and novices in the terms of how they move their eyes during a task. And these are things that we've seen over the last decades at Tobii in other areas. Like you say, we have eye tracking for remote applications, for just real world applications, and all of those kind of use cases I see now transferring into VR, because VR has a lot of appeal to these enterprises in the way they can cut costs and distribute testing, distribute experiences, making them repeatable, and so on. So that's a huge area where I think that the enterprise side will pick up eye tracking very, very quickly on, is on action, getting actionable insights from human behavior.
Yeah, actionable insights and analytics. There's so much potential and power with eye tracking, both benefiting the enterprise implementations as well as the end user. It's almost an episode in itself. But you know, when we look at analytics for eye tracking, we're also able to gauge intent. We're also able to reduce cognitive load. Would you be able to kind of talk about those two concepts? Because that can be pretty new and foreign to most that are not just new to eye tracking, but maybe even new to VR and AR design. How would you describe what is measuring intent in an eye tracking experience, and how does that also reduce cognitive load?
Yeah, I would say measuring intent with eye tracking, if you look from a technical point of view, becomes very apparent when you get access to data as a developer. Because almost everything we do, every action we make, like, is precursored by some sort of intention that always has to do with how we look at the world. So if you try to pick up an object in front of you on the desk, just a pen, you're going to notice that you look at it roughly at the same time as your hand starts moving towards it. So quarter of a second or something like that before. And that goes through pretty much any interaction we have with the world. So taking that into user interface perspective, that means that the user interface you're creating as a developer can actually have knowledge about the user's intent 250 milliseconds before the action is taking place.
How is that different than heat mapping?
So heat mapping is usually what you call, a visualization of the intent of a user or a group of users, but after the fact. So heat maps is something that's used to create actionable insights for businesses when you have a focus group going through the same experience, then you can replay it afterwards, make a heat map that lights up the places where the users were looking. Super interesting to understand human behavior. When it comes to identifying coming intent, then it's more in the interactive experience, making sure that the UI objects highlight as they are paid attention to give the feedback to the user that, yes, I know you're interested in this. And if you issue your button command now, you know that it's gonna end up on this object.
So would you
So
say?
similar, yeah. So similar to when you hover a mouse cursor, for example, on an object, or in VR, if you take the laser pointer to a UI element, they will usually change their visual appearance somehow. You can use very much the same visual change, having a highlight, making it be bigger, have some small movement, something that just shows life. If you connect that to the attention of the eye tracking, you don't have to have the laser pointer anymore. You just do the click. So instead of doing look, point, click, which you would have to do with a laser pointer, because you always look first. So you get from that look, point, click, and go straight to look and click. And that's just so transformative and so much more natural, even though it can sound quite small.
And a good example of why design is so important, especially for this next wave of eye tracking enabled headsets.
Totally.
But I think I love how you kind of describe heat mapping from describing a point of time to what has happened. With eye tracking, you are able to determine what's about to happen. And what a powerful way in terms of being able to understand and create more environments that are more conducive and intuitive to the end user as well.
Yeah, totally.
It's great. Johan, thank you so much for that wonderful overview and the work that you and the Tobii team have done for decades in terms of bringing in eye tracking technologies and now bringing that into AR and VR. Look forward to really continuing to have these conversations with you as well as learn more and more of eye tracking technologies coming to the market. If we wanted to find more information about design, security, where can our listeners go on the Tobii site to learn more?
So for the area of XR, starting at vr.tobii.com is a good place. That's Tobii with a double I at the end, T-O-B-I-I. So vr.tobii.com is a great place to start.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Johan.
Thank you, Vinay. Pleasure to talk to you today.
Always. Fascinating points by Johan. You cannot talk about eye tracking without mentioning Tobii being one of the leading experts in this field. And, you know, with eye tracking, it solves so many of these end user pain points.
You know, Vinay, that's interesting. And I love the litany of headsets that you brought up front that companies are integrating eye tracking into their solution. I'm sitting here going, why? Seems like a pretty minor feature. What am I overlooking? Why is it overlooked by the general users?
And that's a great point, Nirav. And I think that's the challenge you have with eye tracking is the problem with eye tracking is that when it works extremely well, you don't know it's actually working. And there's multi-facets to that. You mentioned a lot about input, output, and performance. And I think it's a great framework to look at technologies in XR in general. So if we're to really look at when it comes to input, what does it actually take to drive a good XR experience? Right now, our input methodologies are really controllers. And controllers are good, but they have such finite possibilities. And we are looking at now with more collaborative software, collaborative platforms, then you look at how we actually interact is much more than just our hands and gestures. It is our eyes. And nothing is more evident than even currently with the use of face masks. You can still communicate with your eyes, even though your smile is completely covered up. But this input methodology opens up new modalities, which is also absolutely necessary. So being able to interact with a menu with your eyes, turn that object on, makes a lot of sense. It's also intuitive. You look at something with different level of intent versus those that you don't want to engage with. And in VR, that's actually completely missing. There's really three parts of eye tracking. There's the input, there's the output. And I think I look at output from a standpoint of analytics and data. We're always collecting analytics and data, and that's not new to any platform, especially not new to VR. But what we're using in VR in particular is heat mapping. Heat mapping is a point in time of something that has happened. With eye tracking, you're now able to gauge what is about to happen because of how our eyes are a window into our consciousness. What we're about to do, you look at that object differently. There's a different level of dilation. And with eye tracking, you're able to interact with that. So for example, if I want to throw something to you versus to Kirby, while in the traditional non-eye tracking headset, I look at both of you equally. With eye tracking, there's a different level of focus on how I look at my object that I want to interact with. And of course, categorically, lastly, performance. When we look at where does XR need to be for further adoption, there is a clear pain point, and then there's reducing friction for adoption, which is smaller and more affordable HMDs, which is going to be really partly solved by enhanced performance, but which I think, in my opinion, is going to be offloading some of that performance to a different architecture with foveated rendering, which is another great topic that we can actually explore as well.
That's great. So you kind of jumped into this framework, input-output performance. It might be worth taking a step back real quick and seeing how that framework, you described it as you went along, but let me just see if I understand. Input is really more about how the application's communicating to the user. Output is more how the application, the user is communicating to the application. And then performance is just performance improvements of the overall experience, correct?
Yeah, I think at a high level summary, I think those are the different aspects that when it comes to XR technologies and features, that's pretty much the three frameworks that you can measure technology across the board or features across the board in terms of what does it do, how useful is it, and what is its impact.
So Kirby, let me turn it to you. I mean, I think we're just kind of scratching the surface here of these use cases and what are the real world problems that eye tracking addresses. From an industry standpoint, what do you see are the key problems, the industry challenges that eye tracking solves?
So there's a whole collection of problems and use cases that bring business value. Some of those could be around safety. So even without wearing a head-mounted display for VR or AR, you might think of a car, driving a car, and the car is watching your eyes to say, are you starting to nod off? And if you are, it'll give you a little kick, a little haptic to say, hey, wake up. Same thing with pilots. There's some interesting research too to say, how do we know if children are grasping a topic? Are they actually learning it? And using, you know, non-traditional methods of just giving them a test. So there's this example where doing eye tracking on children in a classroom, so a real classroom, not a lab experiment, being able to understand where they're focusing and for how long, that information can predict how well the child has grasped the topic. I think as we go forward, we're going to move away from traditional education system and more into project-based and being able to demonstrate that you understand something by doing it.
You know, that brings up two amazingly interesting points. One is with the rise of distance learning, remote collaboration for education, and a number of universities are trying out VR collaboration as a solution in these times of social distancing, that can be really powerful in terms of seeing that students are actually getting what the instruction is. But at the same point, it seems like it would raise a whole slew of privacy issues.
Yeah, I think, well, I want to actually visit a little bit when it comes to VR and education. And in general, you know, some of these data streams that you talk about in terms of when you're in an environment and whether you're interacting with a particular piece of material or content or subject matter, with eye tracking, because you have that level of analytics and insight, what you're also able to do is determine whether or not someone's paying attention. When you're presenting this material, for example, instructors, you know, we talk about VR as a tool to really enhance who the expert in the room is, and that is actually the instructor. They know how to deliver that information. They know how to tailor that information to their students, but what they're challenged with is the current format, or which is very restrictive. With eye tracking, you can actually gauge the level of interest for your students, how many of them are paying attention, and also equally as important, the cognitive load. We're able to understand, are we pumping out too much information, the right amount of information? And this is transformative because this applies to education at all levels. It helps to raise the bar and level the playing field from what may be ways we all learn differently. Lecture for some, hands-on for others. The reality of it is we actually use all forms of learning, but now we're able to understand at what point are our students or our team members actually being able to engage, whether it's in a collaborative space, whether a learning environment. So yes, it does open up some challenges when it comes to user privacy and data security. And Johan had mentioned in terms of the onboarding process for developers of what to use. And I know Kirby has a lot of points or thoughts around user privacy and security, but this is also not new to VR. You can gather so much information. Like for example, Google knows everything about me but my name based on my behavior. So this type of data, the anonymized data, does exist. So I think we can look to parallels in other technologies and platforms and apply some of those best practices to eye tracking in VR and AR, but also understand that this tool is far more powerful when it comes to user insights than any other technology we've had before.
Yeah, and actually, some of the examples that I've read about as well, you know, a simple example is public speaking. That's like the number one thing that most people are afraid of. Some people more than death, they say. So in one paper I read, it was pretty interesting that not just using eye tracking, but using sensor fusion. So they had like galvanic skin response, you know, heart rate, a multitude of sensor data coming in to be able to understand how that person was feeling at different parts of the experience. And this was in VR. And that way they could have some dynamic capability within that experience to help the speaker become better and be less worried, you know, less concerned about this. It is, as Vinay said, right now we do have a lot of data that's out there in the wild, and the average consumer, the average user really doesn't know how much is there. It doesn't mean that we should add more to the stream. Some of these things, like we've seen recently with facial recognition, we really need to wait until there's some regulation, especially for getting really fine detailed data. It may be okay just to get a quadrant where somebody's looking rather than the precise pixel, for example.
Okay, so actually, you know, I kind of want to counter that, Kirby. I feel like if we wait for regulation, there's so many opportunities to really help the end user that we miss out on. You know, it takes some time to catch up for regulatory groups to catch up to where technology is at. And I do think the onus needs to be on multiple parties, those that build for the technology, those that implement the technologies. And so I do feel as though when it comes to eye tracking, we do need to look at this a little bit differently. And some of the categories we need to really identify as well is when it comes to, if you're using eye tracking for training, for example, that there needs to be multiple stakeholders that have input into these tools and we develop these policies. So this isn't really about, is the developer or the technology professional building in all these security capabilities. We do need the chief learning officer, the HR department, these various groups to say, this is something that's gonna help my employees, my team members, my people. How can I safeguard them? How can I do a training program that identifies the end user's gaps in their skills as well as what they're doing well, but how do we ensure that negative data, if you will, is not used against them in the performance? How do we ensure that if you're going to a mall and using a headset and all of a sudden it's eye tracking enabled, that there is some level of consent? So I do think there needs to be other additional considerations that other stakeholders need to have an input in, but I'm not too sure if I would wait for regulatory bodies, because it just takes that group so long to truly understand how technologies can and should be used.
Guys, can we walk through a horror scenario of privacy here? I mean, with facial recognition, it's pretty straightforward, right? You know, you're involved in a protest, the government's tracking you, and now they can use it for political retribution. In eye tracking, I think it's a little bit more nuanced. Can this technology be used to say, and I'm bringing this up partially because I want our listeners to actually kind of feel the threat here, right? Just because I'm sleepy and unfocused one day and my eyes are spinning around in my head, because doesn't mean that something is that any more invasive than Facebook and Google location history? What are the risks here actually on the privacy side?
Well, I think, you know, understanding how eye tracking technology works is paramount, because not all eye tracking is created equal. Just because I can use my eyes for an input to use it for navigation or to get the performance benefits of foveated rendering does not mean automatically you give any data or insights. In fact, you can shut off all analytical capabilities and still be able to use everything from input, from performance, to a variety of other ways to not actually give data back, let's say to a server or to even give up any personal information. So that I think that's an important discussion and especially a caveat to make when it comes to eye tracking.
And that's a good point. That also is at the point at the OEMs and the hardware manufacturers need to guide the way people use the technology, correct?
Of course. And I think you can create safeguards. For example, if you want security in your headset for content, and I want to know the difference, especially now as we get into shared headsets. You know, Originally we were looking at one headset per household because you only had that one avid gamer. But now as you get into all-in-one products and collaboration means much more than working together, it means, you know, being able to visit with grandpa and grandma or being able to scout out your next Airbnb location, that you have multiple users in the same headset. So eye tracking can, with iris detection, unlock the headset and also open up security privileges based on the user. And you can stop and start that just in that one spot. So there are opportunities to use insights, but also limit it to a very specific function. And that's why I always think that those content companies, platform companies that put user privacy and data security first, make it explicit. It's not that you're taking something away. You're actually adding value for the end user and making your platforms a lot more attractive, especially as if we're talking about eye tracking being enabled on a chipset level across multiple competitive products, those platforms that are more secure, and have more gates that the end user can explicitly turn on and off, that's a very valuable value prop.
So a couple of things. I mean, it always comes down to trust. And it also depends if we're talking about commercial applications or consumer applications. Definitely for consumer, I agree that we need to not give up too much information initially because we don't know what the unintended consequences may be. For example, if we gave up enough information on pupil dilation, we can predict perhaps whether somebody is experiencing a particular disease. And if your health insurance company gets access to that, they may say, hey, we're going to deny you, or we're going to increase your premiums. And that's information that, especially on the consumer level, the parallel right now, the analogy is the phone. And with a phone, there's the hardware of the phone, there's the operating system, but then there's the hundreds of apps that you may install on it, and they each have their own terms of service. And we already know nobody reads them, and they get updated all the time. So I think we do need to be very careful with consumer level eye tracking. Business level for training, with it becomes a tool. You still need to communicate to the community, that to the users, that their privacy isn't being invaded. So it has to be very clear that it's only for this session, the data is dumped, or it's only real-time data, all on the headset.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Kirby. And I do think we can model after some of the best practices we have now, even your terms and conditions for your cookies. You're able to either turn everything on or turn everything off, or a better user experience, which, by the way, if someone gives me the option to accept only the option to accept all or accept none, I am going to accept none. But if I have the option to turn certain things on, I'm willing to turn a lot more on and give you access to data that makes it more customizable for me versus give you everything. I'd rather give you nothing than everything. And I feel that same model should not be optional in XR, that there should be an explicit app level agreement on what this application is giving access to. If it's access to just the in-game experience versus using this data back or transferring this data back into a server or even offline to a desktop, those aspects need to be very specifically called out. But and also, you know, when it comes to Kronos, right, that's what Kronos and these standards groups are actually looking into. They're also looking into these technologies being implemented. What are the guidelines for user privacy and data security? So fortunately, the industry has an ally in these groups where you have multitude of stakeholders, well beyond just OEMs, looking at these various topics.
Yeah, in fact, the father of the web, I almost said internet, that's a different fellow, but the father of the web, Sir Tim Berners-Lee, he's been working on a project for a number of years called Solid. And I believe now there's actually like a small startup around it called Inrupt. The idea there is who owns the data? And if individuals can actually own their data and see where it's being used and have the ability to release it to others on terms, that would be incredible. That would change how the web works. It would change all of the business models of these, you know, in quote, free services.
If you don't mind, let me bring this back up, back to a use case specific, because I'm thinking about therapeutics for eye tracking for therapeutics. And Kirby, you mentioned this briefly about identifying potential medical conditions a user might have based on eye tracking, like Alzheimer's and dementia, and how people behave in certain environments and to detect early stage. Brain training is another example where people are trying to enhance certain capabilities, and eye tracking is critical to kind of get a sense of when you're playing a match game where you're looking. That data, while immensely helpful by eye tracking, also opens the door exactly into these type of privacy issues.
And it doesn't necessarily need to, though. And I think that's the important mm-hmm. distinction that we all should really understand, is that that all depends on architecture. If you keep these concerns top of mind, because XR doesn't live in a vacuum. There are other complementing technologies and use cases that we can pull best practices from. But if I want to, let's say, train my brain, I don't necessarily need to give up Vinay's personal data if it even all needs to even get stored that way, right? There's a lot of information that you can use just real time and not have to personalize it, or you can keep it anonymized. So I think when we look at these functionality that you get in the benefits from enabling eye tracking and analytics, while there is a possibility of how it's built for it to be this kind of open door scenario, we should also realize that it doesn't necessarily need to be that way if it's designed that way. So I think asking that question, having these type of discussions, building awareness around eye tracking, the capabilities as well as the risks, is the reason why we should talk about this a lot more. And that's why when I think about eye tracking, why is it so largely overlooked? Mm-hmm. Both, it gives me grief because it's such a profound and such an amazing technology, both for what it can do, but also what it should not do. And I hope this is just the first of many discussions around eye tracking.
Okay, so we've kind of talked through a number of ways that eye tracking both helps and some concerns around it. And it's starting to address one of the major friction points for XR, simplifying interface and improving performance, and adding a level of analytics. Let's talk a little bit about eye tracking adoption. I know it's been, Vinay, you mentioned all the hardware it's in. What are the use cases that you're seeing that are really driving the way to adoption?
So I almost think of, when you look at eye tracking, some want to do, there's actually a really good, there's a few demos out there that do pretty well of turning eye tracking on and off. NVIDIA has a great foveator rendering. What happens when you turn it on and off for performance? There's a good BMW example. But aside from doing a head-to-head comparison, I rather look at it a way that's a little more sustainable, is what can you do because something is eye tracking enabled that you couldn't do before? What are those scenarios? And some of those scenarios include, there's an MLB game, it's an MLB baseball trainer, if you will. And essentially it's a tracker attached to a baseball bat. And that's the only tracked input device in this environment. There are no controllers. So if you want to cycle through menus, for example, you're using that with your eyes, which makes a lot of sense. If you're thinking about, you know, you're in a LBE, location-based entertainment environment, you're in a ballpark, you don't want to go and put the bat down after you're crouched into position to, and then actually use a controller. You want to be able to use your eyes. So when you look at all of those opportunities that you were limited because you had to use a controller, by using more of those use cases and showcasing eye tracking as that opportunity, you start to really open up more VR use cases. So I think looking at it that way, you'll start to increase eye tracking adoption from an existing install base.
You know, eye tracking is also the way that pitchers and catchers communicate to each other. So it's a natural fit.
Great example. Yeah. Plus, well, if that's the case, then maybe a great way to use this as a dating app as well.
Yeah, one thing I really liked that Johan mentioned during your interview with him, Vinay, was talking about if you do have a controller today, there's this workflow of you look at something, you point with the controller, and then you click. Whereas if you have eye tracking, you can just look and click. And it becomes, you know, very natural. It's really fast to do. That's a nice little performance improvement and UI improvement, perhaps, UX. The other one that I like is when I tried HoloLens 2, being able to read a document and have the document scroll just with my eyes. So maybe in the peripheral, I was using my hands to do something, but I could still read a document and actually kind of go to the next paragraph or next virtual page. And that was pretty neat. That's something you can't really do in real life.
You know, I think, and this is maybe a lead in to our next episode, I really think that AR is going to be where eye tracking use cases become really noticeably powerful to the user, particularly around cognitive load type use cases. Adjusting where someone's looking, the object detection in the natural environment, and having AI kind of bring you just-in-time relevant information as you're navigating your way out of the airport. Or if you're on a maintenance task and doing something that requires both hands. Again, my uninformed perspective here, I think that's really where where a user is going to start seeing value.
I totally agree. I think when we look at what the goal for AR really is to really give the end user more superhuman capabilities. And that doesn't necessarily mean more information, it means relevant information. And when it comes to reducing cognitive load, giving relevant data, or just taking off some of the gesture functions that we have to do, which it takes some time to get learning, even in VR, learning how to use an input like a controller, all these things add friction points. So I do think AR really is going to be the future. And if anything that enables AR to come faster to market really is a critical technology for AR. And I also believe eye tracking is a big part of that.
Yeah. AR in the home with Internet of Things is also going to be a fun thing to do, right? So when you get home, you could just look at something and that would have intent to turn lights on or whatever, change the channels on your TV, that type of thing.
Well, I think that deserves a full episode of itself. So good thing we're doing that next week.
Yeah, let's definitely talk about AR use cases for eye tracking. Look forward to that. Excellent. Thanks so much, guys. And that's the time we have today. On behalf of Nirav, Kirby, and I'm Vinay. Thank you so much for joining us here on XRC Pod.